Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
One thing that has come out today, Matt, that's very interesting to me, something I've privately kind of been hoping they do, and it is that the NBA had a conference call. It's a committee of about a dozen team executives who work in both basketball and business for the different franchises, and they discussed some new rules that they might want to try to implement with the NBA. And they would do it in the 75th anniversary season. And that's another topic in and of itself, because I'm assuming, Matt, for that 75th season, they're going to do a top 75 players of all time.
They have to.
Right? Because they did the 50 was at the 50th.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. Your contemporaries, you know, what guys make and stuff. So that's going to be interesting. But for that season, which would be 2021-22, they're talking about shortening the regular season. And the estimates have been anywhere from 58 games. They picked that because then each team would play the other 29 teams, you know, twice, and you'd have one at home each team. So you'd get LeBron at home. Every team would get him once at home. Or, you know, it could be anything up to 70 games, 72 games, whatever. I like it, though. What do you think of the idea of a shortened regular season?
I'm on the fence, you know, for a purist who loves the game, and it's been this way for how long? You know what I mean? It's been this way forever.
Since the 60s, I
right.
think.
But then, you know, keeping in touch with culture and what's going on now, everybody in not only sports but life is just, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and what's new, what's next. And it's no mystery that the NBA season is so long, it gets boring.
Right.
To me, as a former player, the beginning of the season was always a lot of attention. Christmas time was always a lot of attention. And then that January to All-Star break is dead. And then once All-Star break is over is when the season really starts for guys, and knowing if you're going to make that playoff push or if you're tanking, whatever your situation
may
be. So there's kind of three hot spots during the season. But it's a long wear and tear. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard, everyone gave him, you know, a lot of hell about sitting out the whole season last year and then taking, what, almost 25 games off?
Games,
yeah, 22 games off this year, but it paid off with the championship. So how can you really be mad at that? So you see this new, you know, the rest management, and that's new to the game. But I think a lot of people are going to start doing it because it is such a long season.
No, I agree. And one thing I like about it is the NBA's being honest. You know, because we've heard this now for the past few years about, you know, players either taking off games or should they shorten the season. You know, all the analytics, which I don't always agree with, but they're coming out saying it's just too much wear and tear on the human body.
Yeah.
You know, the way you guys play all these games. And I've always said they won't shorten the season because it's going to be less money, less intake. However, I think there'd be a heightened sense of urgency on the games.
Oh, there's no question.
Right?
If you take 20 or 30 games off the top, you know what I mean? You're playing for position right from day one. You know what I mean? Which makes, you know, everyone want to tune in more, because I think we kind of lose. I think the fans, you know, attendance and focus kind of goes through waves, just like as we know the season goes through waves. So, I mean, if you knock 30 games off the top, I mean, that puts that much more importance on each game from the beginning.
Right. And then I think I don't know if you could do it right from the start, but eventually, like a year or two, you could raise ticket prices.
Yep.
I know fans might not want to hear that, but that's how you could make up for, you know, the lost revenue. Because obviously, like, they're talking about a trial run. They can't do a trial run of 60-game season, right?
You got to go. Either you do it or you don't. Do it.
Right. And remember this. I remember when the first round of the playoffs was like
three.
Even before that was best of three.
Back in the 70s. Yeah.
And then, of course, five. And so they're playing, you know, guys are playing more games. And also, I'm going to say this. I think the emphasis on, like, I think players, not to disparage guys back in the day, but I do think they play harder nowadays. Like play defensively,
harder,
especially.
Play harder, and the pace of the game is faster. You know, and I think I want to say in the 80s, it was a high scoring league. There wasn't very much defense.
Right.
It's sort of coming back to that. But to take it even a step further, now kids coming into the league have played so many games before they get there. People don't realize how big this AAU circuit is, man. And how many games. I mean, I'm a coach of my 10 year olds, and we play every weekend, if not every other weekend. So you think by the time you're 18, 20, ready for the NBA, you have a load of games on your belt, and it didn't even used to be like that when I was coming into the NBA. So these kids have a lot more miles on their legs coming into the NBA. So it's definitely a discussion. The NBA is always on the cutting edge of doing whatever, you know, whatever is right, whatever's cool. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to follow through with this.
Yeah, and the other thing they mentioned, two other things. One is a mid-season tournament, which I have no idea what that would. I don't like that idea. Would it be meaningful?
I don't know. I mean, how do you get guys? What are they playing for? Are they playing for a bonus? Are they playing for money? Are they playing for like a mid-season championship? You got to, you know, obviously define what they're playing for. And then, but I do like the fact that, you know, shortening and I like the whole thing where you're not rewarding teams for tanking. Like, okay. I don't think teams that tank should have as, you know, a bunch of more chances to get the top pick. If we can tell, because that's the worst thing when you, as a player planning as a team, you know they're tanking. It's just like, man, are you serious? Like,
so you can you tell when you're out there?
Like, there's no question when you know a team is, you know, when you know the team has turned the button off. You know, some guys are going to play hard, but you know overall, if you hang in there for the first quarter, you step on them, the second quarter, the game's over. And, you know, fans don't want to see it. As a player, you don't want to play against an organization you know is tanking. So my whole thing is I like how they're not, you know, they're starting to lean away from rewarding teams for tanking.
Do you think it sometimes is it not guys tanking personally, but just when you know you're out of it and you know your team doesn't care about making the playoffs, it just naturally takes away your adrenaline.
There's this, there's a little less, you know, wind under your sails when you know you're out of the playoff picture. But like I said, if you shorten, you take games away right from the jump, you're in the mix consistently.
Right.
You know what I mean? And with 53 games, I think it would be very interesting. I would want to see if it does happen and it doesn't work, would they take it back to 82? Like, what would they do? You know, if they make this change and it doesn't, you know, fans aren't happy, players aren't happy, revenue's not what it's supposed to be, would they jump back to 82? And where do they go from there if they do?
Yeah, that's interesting. And it changes, you know, it has historical implications.
Yeah, no
question. Now, granted, maybe guys have longer careers. I guess they would.
Yep.
They're already starting to, but – you know, you're not playing 82 games, so your all-time points aren't going to be what they would have been in that type of era. But, you know, the basketball is so much averages, points per game, rebounds per game, that obviously wouldn't be affected. But a mid-season tournament, I guess, like you said, if you put a monetary, like a big prize on it.
You have to put a big prize on it.
That's the only – because if you don't put a prize on it and you just like – it's like the NBA title. You try to make a midseason title. Who's going to care about that?
Well, I mean, I even think as an organization or an owner, I wouldn't want my guys going all out for a midseason situation, especially knowing if we have a chance to win a real championship.
Right, right, right. Now, the other thing was a play-in tournament, which I assume would be the guys, you know, the teams that aren't in the playoffs get a chance to play a tournament for that seventh and eighth slot. I don't know if I like it for the seventh and eighth slot.
Maybe the eighth.
Yeah, I was going to say eighth. Maybe because eighth. I don't want to totally disregard the regular season.
Right. I mean, but, sometimes, I mean, if you want to tweak something, you don't want to tweak it all the way. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let's focus in a certain area. If we're going to shorten games, let's do that. All the extra is kind of hard. But one thing I would like to see, though, I know it's always been a tough – conversation because of the travel, but I would like to see the top 16 teams just be seeded. I would like not
agreed.
East and West, but let's just get the best 16 teams in one place 16 and down on the line and figure out travel schedule and timing. And with the shortened seed, you could possibly do that because you have more time now to kind of give guys time to, you know, adequate time to, if you have to travel to the East Coast for a game, you can rest.
That's a great point. And it, like, if you went to 58 games and everybody played everybody else twice. Now, sometimes that you would miss, you know, seeing Golden State and the Lakers four times a year or whatever. Mm-hmm. However, I think that wouldn't be that bad. And if that's the case, it evens out the schedule.
Right.
So now seeding them 1 through 16 makes perfect sense.
Right. 'Cause
even if you did it, like say you kept the East and the West as they are, and seeded 1 through 16, it's still not fair.
No.
Because the East is not playing the same toughest schedule as the West.
Yeah, I mean, well, I to be honest with you, when I played, it was always, you know, the weaker the Eastern Conference was historically weaker.
Right.
Through my 15-year run, I think the last few years the Eastern Conference has definitely stepped up and been more competitive. But that's always been the knock. Okay, well, LeBron wouldn't got to 8 straight finals if he had that Cavs team in the West.
Right.
And I agree with that 1,000%.
Well, look at the math, you think he would have got there 3 times.
Yeah.
Right. Because they beat the West team
right.
3 times.
So it's just like, you know, I think that would kill all that talk. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I mean, no disrespect to LeBron and what he did. 8 straight finals is amazing, and the teams he carried were amazing. Yep. But I guarantee if some of those Cavs teams were in the West, they wouldn't have made the finals.
No question. I mean, because just the last few years with the Warriors, they got hammered,
right.
You know, in the finals. So it's interesting, but I like that the NBA is thinking this way. I'll throw out even the baseball. I don't know. Are you a big baseball fan?
I love baseball.
All right. I don't think baseball will do it because of the money. I think one of the best things they could do for fan interest is cut it to, 100 games. That even might be too much.
Was it 162?
162.
That's insane.
Right.
Insane.
That was – I get that in 1920,
right.
Even 1970, right? But now there's so much competition for your attention.
Right.
I mean, as much as I like baseball
– I don't watch still the playoffs now, unfortunately.
Right, and I love the playoffs.
Yeah, right. I'm tuning in to all playoffs, all series, but I, you know, as crazy as my life is, I'm thinking there's 160 – I'm going to catch them later. I'm going to catch them later.
This game is meaningless. I'm sorry. So, if the NBA does it, maybe baseball will think about it. That's one of the things football has over the other two sports.
Is less time. But like I said, the NBA is kind of the trendsetter in professional sports, whether, you know, on a lot of different fronts. You know what I mean? So if they're willing to tinker their schedule, you know, other leagues may possibly look at that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it is our man who will be on MLB Whip Around tonight.
Rob Parker.
9 p.m. Pacific time, 12 midnight Eastern time on FS1. It's none other than Rob Parker. What's happening, man?
Man, what's happening, Chris and Matt? How you guys doing today?
Good, Rob. How you doing out there?
Man, I'm very excited. I actually cannot wait. Chris knows how much I love baseball, and so an opportunity to work on the Whip Around show on FS1 is just a great opportunity. I'm thrilled.
Congratulations, first and foremost.
Thank you, bud.
We told Matt when he was filling in for you that he had to put his hater hat on.
I don't think it fits you because my hater hat is a big size.
Hey, I'm going to hit you with this, Rob, right off the bat. You saw the story about the NBA at least considering now in the next 3 years or so playing lesser games in the regular season, going maybe from 82 to 58 or 60, 65, whatever it might be. Matt and I both, we both like baseball a lot. But we're like, man, baseball would be much better off if they went to about 100-game regular season. Could you, if the NBA does it, could you see baseball looking at that, at least considering, well, the NBA did it. Do we want to shorten the season a little bit? Maybe not 100, but shorten it to some degree?
Yeah, first of all, I'll believe the NBA when I see it. I mean, it's one thing to talk about it and put it out there, but I'm not believing that because you'd have to give money back, players. I mean, I would just wonder where they're getting – you know, money would have to be lowered everything.
You might make each game a little cost more, the tickets, because games would be have more urgency?
I don't know about that. People are already complaining about ticket prices, and you see all across all the leagues, people would rather stay at home and watch TV than go out because it's so expensive. So if you make the tickets more expensive, I don't know if that helps you. It's not the end of the world if it was reduced somewhat. I think 100 is way too little for baseball when you play 3-game series and you know what I mean, and you're trying to cover 6 months of the summer and whatnot. So could it be lowered 20 or 25 games? Yeah, I could see that. And then this way you're not playing the World Series in the beginning of November. So I wouldn't be against that totally.
What are your thoughts about the long ball being back in the days of manufacturing hits and single doubles, triples? almost going by the wayside now. I'm a fan of, you know, back, you know, late 90s, early 2000s when, you know, the steroid quote-unquote era brought the long ball back and brought the excitement back to baseball. What is the feeling around baseball right now that the home run is really back in the game as significantly as it is?
Yeah, you know what? I think people do love when people hit the ball out of the park, and I think that's always been the case. If you go back to what made Babe Ruth the star he was back then, he was the only guy hitting them out the park. So he was bigger than life. So baseball's always been about the home run and about guys who become stars when they hit it out the park. And at this rate, though, it just seems like it's like a game that you don't recognize because it's all about either home run or strikeouts. Right. Guys aren't afraid to strike out anymore. It's not frowned upon. And guys are willing to, you know, let it rip and not be worried about it. And I think it's a little too much. I do love when guys steal bases and hit and run and the base paths are full. You know, I do like that style of baseball as well. So I think there needs to be a happy medium. But here we go again with analytics and what people are looking at. We see it in basketball. And I'm sure, Matt, you think that way too with all the three-pointers. Guys have wide-open mid-range shots and won't shoot it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to compare to is almost the Houston Rockets style of it. You know what I mean? Either you're going to get a single or you're going to get a home run. You know, there's no, the strategy is almost gone from a standpoint of manufacturing runs now. It's just, you know, guys are hitting in the mid-200s, high-200s, and killing these home runs.
And the other thing that needs to change, and this is one I definitely think should happen soon, is to limit the amount of shifts. I think that's what also takes a lot of guys off the bases. You got guys, they have these charts, they know where guys hit, and they stand there and take away hits from guys. That's why guys aren't hitting their averages anymore, because most of those hits are being taken away. And I think that's bad for the game, that it's just overshifted.
So what do you know with some of the hot topics you guys are going to address tonight, or is it just kind of tonight's action?
Yeah, a lot of it is tonight's action. I'm sure we'll touch on some stuff. Stanton went back on the DL with a knee this time, only the injured list, not the DL anymore. But he had just come back, had just hit his first home run of the season, so I'm sure we'll touch on that and some other stuff. Also, there's some classic managers' tirades, and a classic one that Lloyd McClendon had back with the Pirates in 2001. So we're reliving that and talking about that. So there's a lot of good stuff. John Morosi is the other analyst. Mike Hill is anchoring. So, yeah, 9 o'clock Pacific, midnight Eastern, right after soccer. And, you know, I don't even know what to say. I've achieved a lot of things in my career, but this ranks really high up there.
I can tell you're smiling, man. Good luck and congratulations.
Man, thank you so much.
That's right, man.
For real.
Have fun. We'll be watching.
All right, guys. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, peace. It's the Odd Couple, Chris Broussard, Matt Barnes, in for Rob.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Bit about it, Matt, but this is a really intriguing situation to me, and it's the Houston Rockets. Now, we've all read the stories about the issues with Chris Paul and James Harden, but now the GM, Daryl Morey, is reportedly going out there and trying to convince Jimmy Butler. They want to get him in a sign-in trade with Philadelphia. They'd have to give up two of either Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and P.J. Tucker, two of those guys, and then probably got to get a third team involved. But I got to be honest, Matt, I don't like the idea of Jimmy Butler being in Houston with that team for several reasons. First of all, I go to the style of play. Mike D'Antoni's not confrontational enough to go to James Harden and say, we got to play differently. We got to move the ball more. You're still going to be the star and leading scorer and all that, but we have to move the ball. So they're essentially, I think, going to play like they play. And that means Jimmy Butler would have to be like a spot-up shooter, which he's not. He's a 34% three-point shooter. So that's the first reason I don't like it. And secondly, I think he and Chris Paul in the same locker room, both strong-minded guys who speak their mind. I think it could be World War III in that locker room.
On paper, and it seems like that's where Daryl Morey makes a lot of his decisions.
On paper,
it's a big name and it looks great. But if that happens, Philadelphia, to me, wins that trade. Because most likely it's going to be, like we talked in the break, it's going to be Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker going to Philly, which would tremendously help them. It's a tough situation. I mean, there's complaints, and whether it was whispered, yelled, or, you know, there's friction, but of touches. And you're bringing in someone that needs a lot of touches, and guys weren't getting enough touches last year. So you're bringing in someone who needs more touches. You know, like I said earlier, and I'll continue to say, if it happens or when it happens, it's just that next step for James. James is so amazing. It's hard for anyone to ask him to change his game.
Right.
He's putting up numbers we haven't seen. He's probably the most unguardable player in the whole entire NBA. But at the end of the day, they're not winning championships. And I think that's what everyone plays for. So, you know, when someone either makes him or tells him, or he comes to conclusion that, you know, maybe I do need to elevate my game and pick and choose my spots and get my teammates involved, I think that's when you're going to see Houston be one of the most scary teams. If they keep the same team and, you know, just with that change of thought that the James has, is I'm going to get my teammates going and pick and choose my spots, they're a contender next year because Golden State is out the way.
That's why I think, like, Daryl Morey is just panicking. Like you said, I think if they could tweak the offense to get more ball and player movement in it, and essentially, you know, you might add a player or two here or there, but essentially stay as you are, they very well may have been the second best team in the league last year.
They're not a bad team. They continue to run into a dynasty.
Yep.
They're not. Houston is a very good, talented team, but they've continued to run into Golden State Warriors. So now that the Golden State Warriors aren't what they are, at least for next year, if you change that mindset and that thinking, and James continues to mature as a player, because like I said, it's hard to argue with his numbers. Yeah, what do you average?
Right.
35, 36 points
36.
A game, and he can get to the bucket and do whatever it is, but at the end of the day, it's not getting that ultimate goal. So then they say, you know, if PJ wants to talk about, well, Shaq and Kobe made it work, Shaq and Kobe run a lot of rings together.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that heals and that covers up a lot of the dysfunction that went on during that time. This team is not winning. So I think that dysfunction is going to continue to stay consistent around that organization until something happens.
And also, I mean, that was Shaq. Like, as good
and
as
Kobe.
Chris, right. As good as Chris and James are, they're not Shaq and Kobe.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
Close.
So, how, like you said, there's no denying how great James Harden is individually. And he's carrying them to a certain level mm-hmm. as a team.
No question.
But how difficult is it, even when you're winning, you know, maybe not winning championships, but you're winning a lot of games, going deep in the playoffs, how tough is it for the other guys? You know, when you have a guy that's 40% usage rate.
Right. And I can only speak to, you know, I was a role player and I played my role so I could fit in. I played with AI, I played with Kobe, I played with Shaq, I played with a lot of great players. So I was just someone that plugged in. So, but another player that needs the ball in his hands, I can see how they could be very frustrating, especially at the end of the day when you're not winning the ultimate goal, when you have a team that can win. You know what I mean? Who's to say that they don't beat, if Chris doesn't get hurt 2 years ago, that they don't beat Golden State, then win the championship. You know, so it's hard to say, but I just know as a former player, it's not even so much that I want to shoot the ball when I get it, but let me touch it. Just in case it's when you need me to hit that corner three, I'm ready to shoot it. When PJ, you need PJ to hit that corner three, at least let him feel that thing a couple times so he knows, okay, I remember what this feels like.
Right.
But there's times where guys don't really get those touches. And outside players, you know, he's amazing. And I just know without actually knowing that guys look at him like, God damn, bro.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like I said, it's hard to argue because he's so amazing and he scores at will.
Yeah, it is incredible. Like a lot of people say they don't like watching him. I do like watching him.
I love watching him.
Because I know how, you know better than me, but I know how hard that is.
To what he's doing.
Right. To sit in front of somebody and just dribble and then be able to get space, create space for a three-pointer or go by him.
He created a new move, and he's efficient at that travel step back.
Right.
Which they're not, but he makes it. Like, that is one of the people, like, he makes it look so easy. That is one of the hardest shots in basketball. One of the hardest shots you could take is, you know, a double step back, deep
yep.
three, and he makes it look like a layup. You know, so like I said, it's hard to argue or even ask him to change his style because he is so amazing at what he's doing. But at the end of the day, if for the team to get over that next hump, I think it's a must.
We talked about Daryl Morey, and he's like the poster boy for analytics. What do players think? Because I know in front office, look, I'm just going to keep it real. There are a lot of guys around the NBA, like ex-players. Because if you look historically, we've gotten GMs and coaches from the ex-players. But now, I guess, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, it changed to where you got analytics being so involved. And now you got guys that I know you know that didn't play high school basketball.
They couldn't dribble the ball and tie their shoe, right?
Literally, right. Like becoming head coaches, running mm-hmm. basketball teams. Mm-hmm. And a lot of ex-players do think it's racial.
Yeah.
It's a way to get white guys into these high positions, you know, because you can't just take them from the players because there aren't that many anymore. Mm-mm. How do players feel about the analytics craze?
Can I say bullshit on air? Oops, sorry.
We can beep it a little,
yeah,
but
thank you. I apologize.
We get your point, though.
We don't respect it at all. I think David West said it at some point during the playoffs about, you know, throwing the analytics out the window. We don't. You know what I mean? And I think guys like that are overrated because you don't ever consider, like, analytics has nothing to do with who's going to show up in game seven. Who's going to be nervous in game seven. You know what I mean? Analytics has nothing to do with that. It's more of a feel and in knowing a player. You guys that are amazing on paper. You know, Daryl Morey is someone who's amazing on paper to me, but that whole system, he and the whole system is overrated. The analytics is not, it's good to look at, but you still have to go back to knowing a player and feeling a player and knowing something like that and having people making the decisions know something really about basketball.
Right.
It's not just making a numbers thing because numbers look good, but at the end of the day, you have to really know something about basketball to be successful in it. And I think there was, like you said, a little phase of, you know, craziness. Oh, fanatics are analytics are the next thing. And I think that wave kind of came, and I think it's kind of dying out somewhat because you realize that, you know, there's a more human element to the game that you have to assess, and analytics doesn't give you that.
Well, and the interesting thing too is when you look at Golden State, people that don't, I guess, maybe follow them closely just think they throw up a lot of threes. But they get, I mean, KD is and Klay both shoot a lot of mid-range, and Steph too. And then they get a lot of backdoor layups. You know, they do it all. Whereas Houston is the extreme, and obviously they haven't won it yet. Toronto had a lot of mid-range play.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, like you said, it will balance things out. Now, back to Houston, we know that, you know, CP3, Chris Paul, and Harden have had their issues with each other. I don't think they can trade Chris, and so they've got to work it out. How do they work that out in a situation like that?
They just have to win. I mean, they can talk and, you know, go to lunch and put that on Instagram and all that kind of stuff Genie and Magic tried to do. But at the end of the day, they have to win. If those are the guys that are going to be there, you know, once, whether it's trust or friendship or once that bridge is cracked or broken, it's hard to regain it. You know what I mean? Maybe once they're done playing, you know,
yeah,
they can rekindle it. You know what I mean? But once it's kind of gone, it's most of the time gone. But like I said, winning is something that kind of mends that, you know, covers up that hole or fixes that bridge. And until they win, like I said, it's going to be something that's going to continue to be talked about. And it's going to kind of hang over that franchise.
Do you think they can switch the way they play? That James will adjust and get more, you know, Chris more involved? Or you think
like it's just up to James? You know what I mean? Whether he wants to do it or not, because he makes that ship go. And like I said, it's hard to even ask him to change anything in this game because what he's doing is something we haven't seen in a long time. You know, he's mentioned with Wilt and Jordan, and
exactly.
Those are historical names. So how do you tell someone who's mentioned in those sentences that we need you to do this now? But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take whether it's Morey, whether it's the owner, whether it's the suit that is the head coach, whether that's D'Antoni or someone else has to be able to come to him and explain that to him. And I think just as a player, I mean, he's a very smart, intelligent player. I think maybe he can start seeing that, okay, well, you know, maybe if I dish it out, because people say, you know, 7 or 8 assists, he averaged 7 or 6, that's great, but he has the ball in his hands so much.
Right.
He can easily average 28 points and 15 assists.
Yep.
He's that talented. When he wants to go on those triple-double runs, he does it. You know what I mean? So if you know, let me make 6 or 7 passes and take 6 or 7 less shots and see what happens and go from there.
Chauncey Billups once told me, if I had the ball in my hands for 20 seconds of the shot clock and I was either going to take the shot or pass to the guy that's going to take the shot, my numbers would be through the roof.
Amazing. You know?
You know
what I mean? And there's no hockey assist. You know, that hockey assist is making that quick pass and he hit that other person making that right pass. But when you hold the ball for 17, 18 seconds, you know, you're throwing someone a hot potato. You know what I mean? So either they're going to shoot it, one dribble, pull, or get to the basket, and that's the shot clock. So, you know, like I said, Houston, don't, you know, what we're saying, Houston's still a great team.
Right.
Like I said, they've just continued to run into the Warriors. But now that the Warriors are a little bit dismantled, do you completely blow this team up or do you make one more run at it and really James Harden have a heart-to-heart and realize, okay, this is what I need for this team to win. Let's see if we can do it.
Well, how many players are there in the league? Like, I imagine there's a lot of guys that, and I'm not saying Harden is in this boat, but guys that they just want to put up their numbers. And if they're putting up their numbers, maybe they become a Hall of Famer, you know, they're making an all-star team every year. They're cool with that. Like, they're, you know, we always talk about winning a championship. But are there a lot of guys that, man, they just like, look, I want to be a superstar, get my numbers.
I don't know if it's so much saying I want to be a superstar, but I know there's a lot of guys saying they want to get their numbers. And it's hard to blame them these days because when you get your numbers, the reward is life-changing,
right,
you know, for generations to come in your family. You know what I mean? So you almost can't blame those guys. Regardless, I'm going to go out and get my numbers. I'm more of a team, let's do this together, but there's a lot of I guys in the NBA. There's no question.
Well, one player told me that he was like, it's funny because teams talk to you about let's just win. You know, don't worry about your numbers, coming off the bench, whatever, let's just win. But then when you sit down with them to negotiate your contract, they're looking at your numbers. Right,
right.
Yeah. So that's a...